Welcome to the Payments Journal Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Mack. And on today's episode, we're going to be taking a look at data governance and data management. So to help me with this episode, I have Adway Joshi, who is the founder and CEO of DataSeers, and Tim Sloan, who is the VP of Payments Innovation at Mercator Advisor Group. Now, during this episode, we're going to be breaking down an infographic that was provided to us by DataSeers. So for those of you who are following along on paymentsjournal.com, you'll be able to view this infographic in the article below. Now, before we begin today's episode, Tim Sloan is going to be providing us with an overview of the payments industry and how it relates to data governance. Now, there's a lot of great insights to unpack during this episode, so without any further delay, let's start the show.
So data governance has become a significant new concern, and in our outlook for 2020, the emerging technologies practice area identified that as one of just a few key areas that financial institutions are going to have to double down on to be able to manage the data that they collect. From AI, which requires we understand where the data came from, how it was accumulated, in order to try to eliminate any biases that might be included in that data, through to GDPR and the California Consumer Privacy Act, all of which have a right to be forgotten, suggests that understanding how we're maintaining that data today and what needs to change in order to properly manage it into the future and to meet the regulatory requirements and avoid biases in the data is going to become a critical factor starting next year.
So Adway and Tim, thank you so much for joining me on today's episode. So let's kick off this conversation with a discussion around this data governance infographic that is provided to us here by DataSeers. And for those of you who are following along on paymentsjournal.com, you can view this infographic in the article below. So we've got five different qualities which comprise data governance. Adway, if you can start us off by walking our audience through each one of these sections.
Absolutely. So data governance is a big topic of conversation. If you look at the regulators, the biggest question that they're asking is, how is this data being governed today? How do you know that it is correct? And as Tim said, right, it's very important. It's the core, the crux. If I don't have what I need and it's not in a good format, it's not right, then how can I ever do anything with it? So, you know, one of the things that is very important is we have to make sure that the data is laser met, right? Just think about it this way. If a guy is trying to commit money laundering fraud, and you didn't have the data for 5 days to know that, it's too late, right? So the idea is that the SLAs are the SLAs being met or not? I need to have the data as soon as possible. Real time is better, but I can live with next day. Once I get that data, right, am I getting it consistently? Is the quality of the data good, which goes to the data quality checks? Running a data profiling, saying, okay, well, the quality is just a big topic of discussion, but let's get into more specifics of that profile. Let's say that, okay, this is the column that I'm having an issue with, and people don't do this often, right? So I can give you an simple example. Do I have my critical data elements? Are those critical data elements that are being provided to me provided in the correct format? The simplest topic, simplest example would be a merchant city. A lot of times we would get phone numbers in the merchant city. Well, I know that that's not a city. That's a phone number. I can clearly take a look at it and tell you that it's a phone number. So that's what the data profiling does. Data profiling kind of tells you that, okay, here are all the variances. You know, you have text, you have numbers. It's kind of mixed and all over the place. Gives you a clear understanding of who is sending what. And now you can use that to hold people responsible, saying, hey, you know what? You need to send me clean data. Otherwise, I'm going to have to do more work on it. Then, you know, you also have the authentication, authorization, and auditing. And this falls in the data vault concept, right? We want to make sure that we authenticate anybody who is trying to access the data. We want to make sure they have the permission to access that data. And we want to make sure that whenever they access that data, there is an audit that is being maintained. It's very, very important. We know who accessed and what. It's mainly because these days, as we know, and we have read it in the news, that all these hacks that are happening internally as an internal fraud. So we want to make sure we have all the breadcrumbs and we can trace them. So what we have done is, because these things don't happen today when you get usually a data set or data source from anybody, it's always a mess. and if you kind of have assumed that it's going to be a mess and I'm going to have to clean it, what we have come across is, or what we have come up with, is a proprietary process of cleaning it, homogenizing it, labeling it, augmenting it, enhancing it, and encrypting it, right, and distributing. So the process that we use basically assumes that what I'm going to get is not going to be clean. It's not going to be, the data is going to be bad. So how do I take that and actually turn it into something good? And I can visibly show you that, okay, this is what I got before and this is what you have now. And that's what that graphic explains, is that the critical steps, the first four critical steps or four critical things you need to be thinking about when you do data governance. And then the last step kind of shows you what we do on our platform.
Yes, that's so very cool. And I would say that the authentication, authorization, and auditing, as well as the data profiling, are the two areas that are being impacted most by new regulations and by the reuse of the data for AI-type tools that we haven't thought about when we collected the data. So we have to really look carefully at how the data was collected, who participated in it, what geography, what everything actually was used to create that data, so that we can make sure AI doesn't start embodying different biases that might be in it.
Excellent. No, Edway, thank you so much for that overview there. Really appreciate it. And so for my next couple of questions here, we really kind of want to take a look at a lot of definitional things here, just because I think a lot of the things that you had mentioned there, people may understand at a high level, but obviously somebody with your expertise, we'd love to get set definitions here so people can really kind of hone in on exactly what it is that we're talking about here. But first, let's stay a little bit at a broad level here. So Edway, can you explain or define what data management is and why it is important?
Absolutely. So, you know, we call it MDM, or Master Data Management. And the reason why we call it that is because we want to understand all the sources, like Tim said, every single source that is impacting my decision, that is impacting my workflow. So it's very important that you document all of your sources, you have it clear in understanding that what is coming, when is it coming, how frequently is it coming, and what is supposed to be coming, right? And do I have everything that I need to make my decision? And so master data management is a big industry. There's a lot of different people out there have different products, but we have something very specific to the industry that we work with, where we understand what is required in order to have a better compliance platform or a better fraud platform, or how do I reconcile accounts. So it kind of goes across all our four major verticals. And so what we define master data management is the complete understanding of where the data came from, how the data came from, what it's coming, and what is coming in that data. So the ability to pinpoint mistakes, the ability to pinpoint problems at any given point of time. And in a way, when we write software, there is a feature where we can blame a change to a developer saying, you know, you actually made this code break, and there is actually a blame command for it, right? So it's similarly that we can actually blame a particular piece of code. And it's very important that you can get to that granular level. But then that's just the input. When you translate that data through the entire engine, and when it is inside, for example, our data vault, we want to be able to trace it back to where it came from. Think about it as a blockchain, right? In a way, it is a blockchain. It's kind of connecting all these dots way back to the source. So if something happened, it was not supposed to happen, you can go back all the way to the source because there are IDs maintained. And all of that concept of how this works in tandem, how it all connects, how does the data come in, where does it come in a way, you know, called master data management. It includes your authorization, authentication, and auditing, and all of that.
You know, Edway, as you were talking, I started to think of it as housekeeping on a grand scale. It's making sure you know where you got it, where it's kept, made sure it's properly labeled, that you've done change tracking, if you've made changes to the data, where you stored it, who has access, and the like. And it's all the housekeeping that is often overlooked, but so important in being able to make sure that data is reusable.
Yeah, Edway, and I certainly loved your call there of what you called blame code. I think with your permission, I'd love to be able to use that, because I can certainly see quite a few software developers asking the question of who wrote the blame code on that. So I think that's certainly an interesting term there. So now, keeping with our definitions here, Adway, what would you say is your definition of data security?
Absolutely. So it's a question that I get asked all the time, right? We have so much data, and how do you secure it? So my definition of data security is the person who is supposed to have access to the data at the very specific time is the only person at that very specific time gets access to that very specific data, right? That's data security. If I come in another time, if another person comes in, you're not going to get access to the data. That's how things should be secured. Think about it as your house, right? If you buy all of these tools, which people love to throw money at some of these problems, they love to buy these tools, fancy names and everything out there. It's like this. You bought a lock, you bought a security system, you bought all fancy cameras, but you forgot to turn them on or you forgot to lock your front door. You know, you're just letting somebody walk right in, right? So the basic thing you have to really think about is how well protected your data is really at the source. Who can get there? Who can take what they want? And how do you control that? So there's a very unique approach in the industry. We call it the submarine architecture, right? So if you look at a submarine, when a submarine sinks, if one of the parts is compromised, you know, water leaks in there, but everybody else can get to the next part without actually, you know, sacrificing themselves. So they can be safe in another section. That's how your architecture has to be designed. And that's how we have designed our architecture, that when a user comes in from the front end, you know, there are steps. They cannot get all the way in to the place where the data is stored. There are handoffs, there is, you know, handshakes, there is security protocols implemented at each step of the way so that nobody gets access to our core until you have gone through various checks. Because let's just be honest, where does the real breach happen? It happens on an end user's computer or an end user's credentials. Most of the times, that's where the breaches come in, and you are able to access it all the way because you're impersonating that user, which means whatever the user had access to, you now have access to.
What's great is that your platform, Adway, manages all of that security within that overall data governance, data management function, so that it's all part and parcel of the product you deliver.
Absolutely. And that's key. We kind of developed it very early in the game, so we didn't have to go back and change anything. So that was kind of imbibed in our DNA, as you may.
Excellent. So now for our next definition here, I think we kind of touched on it a little bit here, but if we could, I'd really like to kind of hammer it home for our audience. So Adway, what is your definition of data quality? And also, why is it important to have quality data?
That's an interesting question. I was actually talking to somebody yesterday and he asked me the same question. I said, you know, I'm going to make it really simple. I'm going to explain in a very simplistic terminology, right? You know, when you cook food at home, and let's say you're cooking a steak, you go to your local grocery store, buy the steak from there and cook it at home and eat it. It's coming frozen. It was frozen before, you know, you thawed it out and you made it. Versus you went to a local farmer and you bought fresh steak, which was never frozen, and you brought it home and cooked it. You're going to see completely different quality. You cooked it, you used the exact same grill to cook it, you use the exact same mechanism, but you actually see the difference in quality. And that is because it is imbibed in how the meat was sourced, how those cows were fed, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the same applies to data, right? You're going to have better results, higher accuracy, your algorithms are going to run better if the data is high quality. Now, the difficult thing is, how do you measure quality? How do you say that, you know, there is no metric of measurement when it comes to quality? You cannot say my data is 80. Well, it means nothing, right? Or my data is 100. It means nothing. So the way we measure data quality, or what I think is really important, and how you know whether your data is quality or not quality, is ultimately being able to act on it. If you are able to act on it with less noise and high accuracy, your data is potentially very good quality. So what we have done, again, we have a quality index. We call it SEER quality. So we have identified certain key elements. If I'm looking for money laundering, if I'm looking for human trafficking, there are certain key elements that I look for in my data. So for example, if you never gave me the social security number or the first name and the last name of a person, although if I know that they were they were money laundering, I wouldn't be able to catch them. Well, that seems like a pretty important field to have then, so that I can go ahead and file a report on them saying that they were money laundering. So we have developed some metric of what is quality and what does it mean. So to us, data quality is nothing but I can actually trust that data and I can use it to produce high intensity alerts and very accurate alerts with less noise. So we call it SEER quality, and we have developed it on a scale of 0 to 100. For each different algorithms that we use, all those data elements are taken into account, and each element has a different weight, as you may imagine, right? The hair color may not be as relevant to me as a date of birth might be, or a geography might be. So that is how data quality can be measured. Of course, there is no, like I said, there is no set rule. So everybody is going to have their own algorithms that they use. But the good thing is that if you can measure it and you can visibly show it, that higher the quality, better were my results, less noise, I think in general, everybody would agree with those numbers or metrics that you're throwing out.
Again, what I like about your platform, AdWeight, is, you know, quality of data is dependent upon the purpose that you're going to apply the data. And because your platform is tuned to very specific purpose, you're able to measure and rank the data that you receive and use. What has caused problems in general AI is where they collect the data for some purpose and then reuse that data in order to discover other attributes about the data itself, and that's where biases start to pop in. So having a platform like yours, which is very specific, knows what to look for in the data to make sure that the quality is there, is a critical aspect to being able to rate it and monitor how well it's producing the desired results.
You're absolutely right. I mean, we are not trying to boil the ocean. We are not trying to solve different problems. We are trying to solve one specific problem and making it very straightforward. So yes, we do have that advantage where we know the industry we are working in. We have expertise in that industry, and that's all we look at. So you're absolutely
right.
And you can work with
those financial institutions to make sure the data is what you need.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for that simple explanation there. I mean, I think it makes perfect sense when you're kind of just, in my point of view, when you relate it to kind of food and the quality of things, I'm able to easily pick up on what it is that you're talking about and understanding it completely. But if we could break free from our definitional questions here, I'd like to jump back to the master data management here and ask specifically, what role does data governance play in the master data management?
Absolutely. So again, governance, the whole idea is, do I have a handle on what's going on, right? Do I have a handle on the who's and the what's within the data? And if I do, then do I have a handle on the why, right? So, and that's where data governance comes into play. It's a big topic of discussion. The auditors absolutely love to talk about and ask questions to the financial institutions, saying that, okay, do you have a good handle on data governance? How are you ensuring that you are monitoring it, and so on and so forth? Now, what approach we have taken is we have, again, created a piece of technology, right? What my ultimate dream is that, you know, you be able to go, and again, this is, again, ultimate dream. I don't think it's ever going to happen, but a financial institution should be able to go to a regulator and say, okay, here is a login name and password. You can actually log in and see what level of governance we actually do. If something comes in that's not supposed to come in, if somebody gets access to something that they're not supposed to, and the whole nine yards, all of that is here, logged, traced, tracked, and handled using a software, because the idea is that people can make mistakes. Machines seldom make mistakes. So the more and more automation and more software we can push in this, the better it becomes. And again, at the end of the day, software is cheaper than people, right? At least in this part of the world it is. So we are trying to add more on that piece so that our banking partners, financial institutions, and the people that use our software are sleeping at night saying, okay, you know, I have at least one box checked and the auditors are not going to bother me anymore.
What's interesting is that Up until recently, a financial institution could manage its data. It knew what data it was collecting. It identified the rights to access the data within its own institution. With GDPR and others that provide consumers the right to be forgotten, all of a sudden there's an external perspective that needs to be addressed within the data collected and the database. And I think that's going to be challenging in a lot of instances.
Absolutely. And, you know, Tim, you bring up a good point because we recently had to make some modifications. When we originally designed our system, it was originally intended like a blockchain where you can't just go and erase something that happened, right? And I don't want you to commit financial fraud, then come and tell me that I want to delete this data. Of course, that is covered under the GDPR. You don't have to. But there are some cases where you have to go ahead and delete. And it was a major change on our platform where we had to make a change to support GDPR and any future other acts that come out like the CCPA and whatever happens with the rest of the states, where you know we are going to have to support the functionality of delete, you know, right to be forgotten, delete my data because I haven't done anything on your platform, I haven't interacted. So keeping the legalities and keeping the compliance regulation and the regulatory stuff in play, we actually did a major thing on our platform where we can now say that yes, we support the right to be forgotten piece of the GDPR.
Smart of you to stay ahead.
Absolutely.
Oh, excellent. Now, and so for our last question here is a bit of a multi-parter and does have a definition to it. So, Adway, what is your definition of encryption? And also, when we take a look at authentication, authorization, and encryption, where do you see all of those three intersecting?
Absolutely. See, encryption is a very broad term, right? If you look at the PCI standards or any other standards, they will say, well, data encryption at rest is required. It's very simple. I can encrypt the disk and I can check a box and I can say, okay, I want PCI encryption and here you are, data is encrypted at rest. Well, but what happens when the machine boots up? Now, you know, anybody who has a user access to it is going to be able to read the data unencrypted so they can steal it, right? But yes, if they grab the drive and ran away, it was encrypted. I get that. So encryption is a very deep thing, right? You know, if you really want to do encryption, if you really want to encrypt your data, and data encryption has to happen at multiple different levels. So in our latest release in Gen 2, as we call it, we are supporting even column level encryption, right? So a user, end user, can decide who gets access to that data at a column level. Before, we would have it, very generic, saying, okay, you have access to this report and that report. Now I can see you have access to this report, but not to this column. And it was a very, it was a big deal for us to implement that because what we are trying to do is we are trying to keep the data encrypted as much as possible. So if you look at the data pipeline, right, and if you look left to right, encryption happens way over on the right where the data is stored, and then authentication, authorization happens way on the left where the person is first trying to log in. So what we did was we are trying to bring encryption and authentication and authorization together, like closer. So what we do, and this is also because I am paranoid about everything, you know, small company and working with smaller banks, data encryption and, you know, hacks are a big deal. So we also encrypt data in motion, right? So the way we do it is anything that happens at the client level first gets encrypted and moves through the system as an encrypted string all the way to the end. It's a very typical implementation happens with most credit card acquirers. They would swipe your credit card, and before they transmit those numbers, they're encrypted, right? So there is definitely more and more people are now moving on the spectrum towards the left-hand side of that encryption and saying that, okay, I'm going to encrypt the data as soon as I can. Before, they were saying that I will encrypt the data as the last piece. But now people are changing that mindset because anytime, any place, anywhere in your application data is unencrypted, it is at risk, even if you have authentication and authorization in place. So the sooner I encrypt, the better it is for me. And of course, after you encrypt, you have to do the authentication and authorization to figure out who has access to that encrypted data. And so now One of the things that we are implementing is everything that comes out of our platform will be encrypted in such a way that the only person who can decrypt it is going to be our clients, which means even anybody in our staff will not have a way to decrypt that data. So if something happens, the only way it happened was because of someone in the IT department of our client took that encryption key and gave it to somebody that they were not supposed to, right? So that's what we are now doing, is everything is getting encrypted way ahead of time and running through the entire system encrypted.
That was great, Ed. Wait, you know, those all make sense within a specific system. The general terms make that question really hard to answer. You know, authentication, I identify who the user is. Authorization, I recognize what their rights to access are and identify for a transaction or access privilege, whether or not that user indeed has the privilege. And then encryption cuts across all of that. It's a way of enforcing it. And so within your system, you've decided how to use it to enforce all of the authorizations that your platform delivers.
Exactly.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Adway and Tim, for taking the time today for speaking to me about data governance and data management. And I hope to have you both back on the podcast real soon.
Thank you, Adway.
Thank you, Tim.